Tesvov Tavis, Wednesday the 18th of December, Rabbi Nosson Adler, The Paradox of Our Existence.
We know that Klal Yisrael came down to Mitzrayim as a small group. They were a small group of 70 people, and during the next 210 years, they grew into a group of 600,000 people by the time they left Mitzrayim. And the Medrash tells us there were 600,000 men between 20 and 60. There were another 600,000 men under the age of 20. There were another 600,000 men over the age of 60. And then you got the same thing with the ladies. So altogether there was 3.6 million Yidden that left Mitzrayim. And that's besides for all the four-fifths that were Nifta in Mitzrayim. So Klal Yisrael grew at an extreme rate until they got to this size when they left Mitzrayim. But the Pasuk tells us it didn't just grow at a fast rate. The Pasuk tells us there was a very specific rate of growth. The Pasuk tells us at the beginning of Parashat Shemos, Kasha ya'anu oisoi, kein yirbe v'chein yifritz. The rate at which they grew was directly relative to the extent of the affliction that they were going through. Kasha ya'anu oisoi, as hard as they were afflicted, the more they were afflicted, the more they grew, the faster they grew. And Taka Shevet Levi, Shevet Levi didn't have to work, and therefore they came out as the smallest group at the end of the time of the Gola. So we see the Rabbein Shem decided that they shouldn't just grow fast, they should grow at the rate of the affliction that they were going through. Now why would the Rabbein Shem do that? What was the idea of that? I mean, we know that Tzvadeya actually grew at a similar sort of rate. They came out as a one big Tzvadeya, and the harder the Mitzrayim hit the Tzvadeya, the quicker that they came out. Now, you would have thought that the Mitzrayim would have sat back and said, hold on, the more we hit this Tzvadeya, the more Tzvadeya that come out, the best thing is, let's just stop, let's not hit it, it'll sit still, we have one Tzvadeya, that's not too terrible a Makkah, they could have got away lightly with this Makkah of Tzvadeya. But they didn't, they got frustrated, they saw every time they hit it, more came out, they couldn't even think straight anymore, and they just hit it and hit it and hit it, and more Tzadeya came out, and they went through a terrible Makkah. Now the Mitzrayim did the same to the Yidden. The harder, the more they afflict the Yidden, the more Yidden that were born, the best thing for them would have been to just stop. There would have been this small group of Yidden, they could have coped with that, that wouldn't have done anything too terrible to them, and life could have gone on. But they didn't, they got frustrated, they got angry, and they went and they afflicted them more and more, and as they afflicted them more and more, they grew faster and faster. So what was the idea of the Rebbein Shem making Klal Yisrael grow at the rate of affliction? I was learning a Gemara recently, Gemara in Krisus. The Gemara says, Tanya brings a braiser. Ochal sofik chelev v'noidaloi. Person eats a sofik chelev v'noidaloi. He eats a piece of meat. He's not sure if this meat is bosso or chelev. He doesn't know if it's kosher or not. And he went and he ate it. And then he realized that he ate it. And the chiyuv, he's got a chiyuv oshem toloi. The korban that he has to bring up now is the oshem toloi. The problem is that before he had the opportunity to bring up the Oshem Toloi, he went and he ate another piece of meat, and the second piece of meat he had the same shayla on, and now he's eaten two pieces of meat, and each one has got a chiyuv Oshem Toloi. And the question is he chayav to bring one Oshem Toloi, or two Oshem Tolis? So the Braisa goes on, it says, Rebbe Omer. Rebbe says, Omer ani, I hold that halacha is, k'shem shemei v'chatos akol achas v'achas, just like if he would eat a piece of chelev, and he'd know that he ate the piece of chelev, and then he'd be chayev v'chatos, and if he ate two, he'd be chayev two chatois. The same thing is as the Oshem Toloi, he's chayev to bring the Oshem Toloi. And the Braisa continues with other tanoim who are chelek, whether you bring one Oshem Toloi or two Oshem Tolis. But it's an interesting loshon. Rebbe got up there and he said, Rebbe Omer, Omani, this is what I say. It sounds like a funny way of walking into a base medrash. You can imagine them all talking about this shayla. And Rebbe gets up and he says, Omani, this is what I hold. It sounds a little bit like a hint of gaiva going on over here. To get up and say, this is what I hold, listen to me, this is my shitta. What did Rebbe mean by using this loshon, Omani, this is what I hold? I actually went and I did a search to try and see, searching computer, how many times do people say Omer Ani? I found there's 15 times through Shas that different Tanoim say that the Omer Ani comes up. But the funny thing was that every single one of those Omer Ani's are all Rebbe. There's no other Tana in Bavli, Talmud Bavli, who ever says Omer Ani. It's only Rebbe. He's always the one who gets up, Rebbe, Omer, Omer Ani. This is what I hold. Now let's remember that Rebbe was the one who the Gemara says, Misha Mesa Rebbe, when Rebbe was Nifta, Botla Anova. There was no more Anova in the world. That means Rebbe was the one who was the biggest. He was the epitome of Anova in the world at his time. So what's that mean that he gets up and he says, Omer Ani, this is what I hold. There's another Gemara in Sukkah. A well-known Gemara, Hillel walked into the Simchas Pesach Sheva and he used to say, Imani Kan, Akoil Kan. If I'm here, then everyone's here. And again, the Gemara is very difficult to understand. What's that mean? I walked in. He walked in and he said, I'm here. Everyone's here. So Rashi already is worried by this kasha, and Rashi says, nah, he doesn't mean if Anika, he doesn't mean if I'm here, he means if Hashem's here. Because what Rashi means is that we know that one of the shemas of Hashem is Ani. We say Ani v'hoi Hoshi or not. So Ani is one of the shemas of Hashem, it's one of the names of Hashem. So you know what Hillel meant? He meant to say, if Hashem is here, Hakol Kan, then everyone's here. Now again, this Rashi is very, very difficult to understand. There's so many different shemas of Hashem that Hillel could have chosen. He could have chosen the name Kel, he could have chosen the name Kim, he could have chosen Kel Shakai or Kel Chai. There's so many different names that we come across with the name of Hashem, that the one name he had to choose was Ani. I mean, when we all read the Gemara, we all want our simplicity without knowing anything else. We read, Im Ani Kan HaKel Kan, as far as we're concerned, that means, if I'm here, then everyone else is here. And it's almost as if Hillel saying to us, you know what, I fooled you. You thought that I meant if I'm here. I didn't even mean that. I meant that a name Ani happens to be also a name of Hashem. And therefore, really what I meant to say was, if Hashem is here, that everyone's here. If that's what he meant to tell us, why didn't he say it clearly? Why did he use this name of Ani, which happens to mean I, which happens to make us think that he means himself, but really he means Hashem? Now we all know that we're created with a guf and a neshama. The pasuk says, "Vayitzar Hashem elikim es adam ofam en adam." Hashem created a person. He made him ofam en adam. He took the dust of the earth and he created a man. And the pasuk goes on, "Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim," and he blew into him the nishmas chayim and neshama. So we've got these two parts of us. We've got our guf and we have an neshama. Rabbeinu B'chai says an interesting thing. We know that a mezuzah, after we've written the mezuzah and you've rolled it up, on the back of the mezuzah you write a shin. And the shin is there so that once you've rolled it up, what you're going to see on the mezuzah is just that shin. And that shin comes from the name of Shakai of Hashem. That's the shin that we write on the mezuzah. So Rabbeinu B'chai says a very interesting thing. He says that the neshama, which Rabbeinu Shem put into the guf, was blown into the guf through the nose. That's what the pasuk says. Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. Hashem blew the neshama into the body through the nose. Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. He says when a person's nifter, the neshama leaves out through the nose. So he says, Minifloys yetzira ba'odom. One of the amazing things about the way that Rabbeinu Shem created the body is that a person has a shin. At that gateway, where the neshama goes in and out of the guf, Hashem put a shin. And every human being has got, at the end of his nose, a shin. Because there's three, Tefanes, he says, there's three walls coming to a point over there, which is exactly in the shape of a shin. And maybe the idea over there is, just like we have a shin on our house, which is supposed to be a shmir of what goes into our house and what goes out of our house, so also we have a shin on the end of our nose, which is supposed to be the shmir of what goes into the guf, what goes out of the guf, the neshama that we allow in and out. And that's a shin which he says just comes from the shame of Shakai, which we put on the end of our, which Rabbi Shem put on the end of our noses. So we have our guf and we have our neshama. The guf is pulling us one way and the neshama pulls us in a different way. The neshama is pulling us towards doing the ratzon of Hashem. It's pulling us towards doing the mitzvahs. It's pulling us towards seeing life in the long term, towards getting towards our goal, our tafkid in life. And on the other hand, we have a guf. And our guf pulls us towards doing averus. It pulls us towards enjoying life, towards the instant gratification of life. So that's our guf and our neshama, and they're pulling in opposite directions, and they can't be worked together. The God says he's got a raya. He says, I've got a proof that the guf and neshama can never work together. They've got to work separately. He says, I'll show you. He says, the guf only grows when the neshama is out the way. And he says, the neshama only grows when the guf's out the way. So he says, the guf only grows when a person's sleeping. When a person is sleeping, the neshama is quiet, the neshama is out the way, he's not focused on the neshama at all, it's a 60th of Misa, the neshama is out the way, then the guf can start growing. That's when a person grows. The neshama, he says, you can only really use your neshama when you get in touch with your neshama most, is when you're concentrating, when you're trying to think. That's when you're most in touch with your neshama. And he says, you can only really think when your guf, your body is relaxed, it's comfortable, it's calm. If a person is uncomfortable, it's very hard to concentrate, because if you've got to focus on your guf, then you can't focus on your neshama. So you have your neshama and your guf, and they're two opposite powers. They're pulling the person in opposite directions. And there's a fight. That's a fight of our lives, is the guf in one direction and the neshama in the opposite direction. But the funny thing is that when we talk about our guf and we talk about our neshama, we seem to talk about them in very different ways. Imagine we're sitting on the couch and relaxing in the evening, and suddenly we realize that it's time for Maariv. I've got to get up, I've got to go to Maariv. So we can imagine what it's like. You're sitting there and we think to ourselves, you know what? You turn to yourself and you say, it's time for Maariv. You better get up, you better go to Maariv. And then you turn back and you say, you know something, I'm really comfortable. I can't be bothered to go to Maharifor. What I really want to do is sit here and relax. And you answer back and you say, no. You've got to get up for Maariv and you've got to go and you've got to do it. This is what you're supposed to be doing. This is the right thing. And there's all discussion going on here. On the one hand, to go, or the one hand, not to go. But why is it that this discussion is that the I over here is, I want to sit and relax and enjoy myself and have a good time. The you is that you are supposed to be getting up and going and doing what the right thing is. So if we have in ourselves a goof and we have a neshama, we have a pull in both directions, why isn't it I want to sit and relax and I need to go and daven, or you want to sit and relax and you want to daven? We seem to refer to ourselves in the goof terms, we refer to ourselves as I in the first person, and the you in the neshama terms, we refer to ourselves as you in the second person. Is that's not right? If it's a guf and neshama both in us, they should both be first person or second person. So Reb Dessa says a very interesting thing. Reb Dessa says at the time of the chait of Adam HaRishon, the neshama, the guf, the power of the Yetzer Hara was so strong that it took over our guf. And it got to the point where all we think about in guf terms is constantly ourselves. All we think about is things in guf terms. And then we have a neshama on the outside which is coming to fight us and trying to get us to do the right thing. The power of the Yetzer Hara was that it seeped right into the guf to the point that all we could do is see ourselves for our Yetzer Hara. See ourselves in our Yetzer Hara terms. See ourselves as what we want to do is the wrong thing. And then see a power on the outside of the neshama coming and saying, no, it's time to do the right thing. He changed that koyach of the nochosh, of the Yetzer Hara at the time of the chait of Adam HaRishon, was that he changed the balance. He became the focus of our lives, becomes the I, the guf, and having a good time. And on the other hand, the neshama stands outside trying to convince us to do differently. I once saw in the name of the Shlo that he says, the nochosh hishi ani. When that nochosh came, Adam HaRishon said, a nochosh hishi ani. So he says, hishi ani is a Lashon Hifil form. Hishi ani, hifil, means he caused, shi ani, hifil, it's a he, shi ani, he caused shi ani. Shi ani is the letters of shin yud, aleph nun yud, is the letters of yesh ani. What the nochosh taught us was that yesh ani, there's an I, there's a separate I to Rabbein Shem, there's a goof over here who's got his own interests, and the I became me, yesh ani, I'm a separate entity to Rabbein Shem. While the neshama is trying to teach a person that the only thing he should be doing is zorotzein Hashem, and the only thing he should be doing is an expression, it's those things that express the rotzein of Hashem. The goof was teaching the person that yesh ani, I'm a separate entity, I've got my own interests, I've got my own things that I'm interested in doing. So the guf is the self-centered side of the person. It's a side of the person that's trying to teach him, just look after yourself, yesh ani, you've got your own personal ritzonus, keep your own ritzonus, make sure you're comfortable, make sure you're happy, make sure you're enjoying yourself. And on the other hand, you have the neshama, which is pulling the person to teach him, no, don't do what you want. It's batel ritzoin cho, mipnei ritzoin noi, is do what the Rabbeinu Shalom wants you to do. So the neshama is teaching the person to think on a much broader level, think of the Rabbeinu Shalom, think of his ritzoinus. And the guf is teaching the person, no, be self-centered. Only center on yourself, only center on your own ritzoinus. The Tzemach Tzedek used to tell his chassidim that if you're having a milchama, you need to work on a certain area of avodas Hashem. So he'd say to them, it's very hard for a very simple reason. He'd say, you have your guf and you have your neshama, it's one against one over here. How are you going to win? It's hard for the neshama to get up and win against the guf when it's one against one. So he'd say, I'll tell you what to do, I've got a great idea. Call a few more people in, work with other people on the Indian, and then it's going to be two against one. If you get three people in there, there'll be three against one, four against one. Get a whole group and you'll become a lot more powerful. So the chassidim turned around to him and he said, I don't understand you. If I call another person in, he's also got a guf and he's also got a neshama. So it might be two neshamas, so it's going to be two against two. And if I get another two guys in, it'll be three against three or four against four. How is that going to make me any more powerful? So the Tzemach Tzedek said, no, you're making a mistake. He said, the guf is inherently self-centered. The guf is never going to join up with anybody else to get anywhere, because all the guf is interested is in his own personal interests. And if it makes him happier one way, he's going to go for that direction. If it makes him happier a different way, he'll go in a different direction. The guf has got to bring to a separation of people. While the neshama is only interested in one thing, in the Ratzon of Hashem. So if you've got lots of people over here, we're all interested in the Ratzon of Hashem together. So now it's going to end off at five against one. there's not going to be, it's not going to be five against five. The gufim will stand separate, and the neshamas can join together. The onav is a person who recognizes that everything that he's got is from Hashem. The onav is a person who has no interest in himself as per se. He doesn't see anything that he has as his own. He's not focused on his guf. He's the person who's removed the ani of the guf from himself. And he acts only according to the neshama. He's a person who acts according to the rotzon of Hashem. He follows the dictates of his neshama in the direction that his neshama is teaching him. So this person is now acting every time he acts. He's acting according to his neshama. And therefore he can walk around with a tremendous confidence. He walks around knowing that everything he does is the rotzon of Hashem. And everything he's thinking is the rotzon of Hashem. He's become a much, much bigger and more powerful person. And that's really the paradox that we hit over here. Is the more the person annuls himself, the more he negates his own interests, the more he removes his guf from showing him the way he should be leading his life, the more powerful he becomes, the stronger he becomes. Because the more he removes his guf, the more the neshama plays a role. So the more he removes his guf from telling him what to do, the more the neshama tells him what to do. So the more he removes his own self-interest, the more the Rabbeinu Shem's interests play a role. And that makes him a lot more powerful. That means that what he's doing is the rotzon of Hashem. That makes him a much bigger person. If we take the simple moshul of the eved, of a servant, of a minister of a king, the more that minister walks around saying his own opinions, his own interests, he's worth very little. All he really is a man off the street. The minister's job is to go and say over what the king's ideas are. It's to repeat over the decrees of the king. The minute the minister walks in and starts saying over what the king says, everyone's quiet, they're all going to listen to him. Because what's he doing? He's repeating over the king's position. The minute he walks in and starts saying his own things, he's just like any other person. So the more we are self-centered on ourselves, or all we're interested in is our own interests, the weaker that we become. The more we annul ourselves, the stronger, the bigger that we become. And that's the paradox of our existence, is that the more we focus on our independence and on our existence, the weaker we make ourselves. Rebbe was the one who was the epitome of anova in his time. He got up and he said, Oymer ani, Rebbe, oymer ani. Because Rebbe knew that he was the onov, and he knew that every single thing he was doing was the rotzon of Hashem. Because he didn't have his own interests, he was an onov. His interests were only, what does Rebbeinu Shem want over here? So he could get up and he says, Oymer ani, this is what I hold. Because his I was now his neshama. The way he felt, the way he wanted, there was a batel ritzoin chom ebnei ritzoinoi. And therefore his I became his neshama. Hillel could walk in. And he could say, Mani Khan, Hakoil Khan. His ani that he's referring to Hashem of Hashem ani. What that means is that when he walked in, he was an expression of the Rotzen of Hashem. And wherever he went, what you saw walking in it was a being which is fully encompassed by his neshama. It's fully encompassed by the Rotzen of Hashem over there. So when he spoke and he said ani, he said I. The I that he's referring to is not himself, it's Rabbeinu Shleilam, because that's all he is. He's only a expression of the Rotzen of Hashem. So his ani is referring to the Rebbeinu Shem, but referring to himself. He's referring to the way the Rebbeinu Shem is able to express himself in this room by him being an ani, by him being here. So that's his amani kan akol kam. It's interesting, it's well known that the Altov and Sabotka, he was the one who introduced the Indian of Gadlus HaOdom to Klal Yisrael. He taught Klal Yisrael, he taught his Bochrim how to walk, how to dress well, how to be self-respecting. He taught them the idea of self-confidence, of being mechabed, the person for who he is. He actually had a Talmud, Reb Reuven Grzovsky, who used to walk stooped over. He used to walk looking down, stooped over. So the Altar tried to get him to walk straight. He said, come on, you've got to walk with the straight back. You've got to walk with your nose up. You've got to walk proud of yourself. And he couldn't do it. And he kept walking down, kept every time going back and looking down. So eventually the Altar said to him, I'll tell you what, I want you from now on to wear a pair of glasses. Those days you used to get these glasses without the sides. He said, I want you to wear a pair of glasses without these sides and put them on. You can put glass inside. They don't need to have any strength. You put them on the end of your nose, and now you've had it, because every time you look down, your glasses will fall off. So he was forced to start walking with a straight back and walk up. He taught Klal Yisrael the inner godless odom of a person being proud of himself. But on the other hand, Altov Zabotka himself, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, used to say about him, he learned there in Zabotka, he used to say that Altov Zabotka, he wanted more than anything else that he should never have existed. He wanted that after he would be Nifter, no one should even know that there was ever a person of the name of Altov Zabotka. He completely hid himself. When he opened up his yeshiva, Zabotka, no one even knew that he was the one who opened it. He went and employed a different Rosh Yeshiva, and no one knew who was the one who had actually been the powerhouse behind opening the yeshiva and who was running it. The Bochum used to say that they worked out that there was a certain person who was sitting in the Beis HaMedrash who was better than everyone else, and they used to go and ask him questions. That's it. They didn't know who was the power behind opening the yeshiva. Because more important to Altov Zabotka than anything else was the self-annulment, was being annulling himself. But once he had annulled himself, then that's where we have this paradox. He became a much more powerful person. He was able to teach godless Adam being proud of oneself. Rav Moshe Feinstein was another Onov, well known for his Anova. He was once getting in a car and someone called Moshe. He was calling someone else. No one was calling Moshe. Moshe. He called someone else called Moshe. And immediately Moshe turned around and said, "Yes, how can I help you?" He assumed immediately he was talking to himself. He was an Onov. He was a complete Onov. But nevertheless, when Moshe was talking to someone once at a chasna, and the person pushed him and pushed him, and he was beginning to talk in a chutzpahdik way, Moshe turned around to him and said to him, "Young man, I don't think you realize who it is that you're actually talking to." He was able to get up and say to somebody, "Listen, you don't realize what you're saying, you don't realize who you're talking to, because what I am is, everything I say is an expression of the Rotzon of Hashem. I wouldn't argue with you if I were you. You shouldn't be arguing with me at all, because you should realize what I am, you should realize my power." Not because that wasn't the gaiva that came from his anova. That's the paradox of the honor of being able to become the strong man. And just one last little story, Reb Chaim Brisker was well known for his anova. Reb Chaim Brisker used to do anything for anybody at the time when there was a fire in his town. He wouldn't even sleep in his bed because he felt sorry for the people who were there who weren't able to have their own houses. He was a person who was completely focused on other people. He didn't have any interest in himself. But nevertheless, when Reb Chaim came to a gathering of many rabbonim, and there was a discussion whether to introduce the Russian language into the schools in the Chadorim there in Russia, and there was a big discussion, there were many rabbonim who held different ways. And Reb Chaim got up at the discussion, and he said, "Rabbonim, I want you to know, I am Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. My name is Reb Chaim Soloveitchik." He said, "My name is spread right around the world. The whole world knows the Chaim Soloveitchik." He said, "I'm a famous person, and my Koyach HaTorah demands me to tell you that I hold that you shouldn't be introducing the Russian language into the schools." So you had here Reb Chaim on the one hand who had completely annulled himself, he negated himself, he had no interest in himself, but nevertheless he was able to get up in front of all the other rabbonim and say to them, "I am Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and I am the one who holds that you have to or don't hold or bring in the Russian language." So we have here this paradox. On the one hand, a person pulls himself down, he becomes an onov. He pulls himself, his batel ritzoincha. And on the other hand, he becomes a mipnei ritzoinoi, and he becomes an expression of Hashem's rotzen. One of the most powerful ways of a person reaching this madrigo of actually being the batel his own rotzen is when he goes through difficulties in his life, goes through painful experiences. I was talking to a bocha just last week who works for a certain organization which puts on various events for kids in a certain school. So he told me, it was last week, Wednesday, and he said, "You know, I've had a really bad day today." So what happened? He said, "My job is to market the events that the organization put on. They put the events on, and my job is to market it. I've got to make sure that the guy's interested in coming." So he said, they put on an event for this just past Motzei Shabbos. They hired a hall for 80 people. And they had hired various entertainers. They had gotten themselves all ready, and they told him, "Right, your job is to market it." So he said he had decided that the best way of marketing this is just allow itself to advertise itself. He said it's much better let the kids come themselves. They already know about these things. They'll come. And they said to him, "Be careful, remember to advertise it." He said, "Don't worry, I'm telling you, I know these kids, I know the event, it's going to work, it's going to be great, they're all going to be there." He said he walked into the office on Wednesday morning, and he got these glares from all different people, and he realized something's gone wrong today. And he goes up and he says, "What's happened?" So they said to him, "Really sorry to tell you, but we booked a hall for 80 people, and so far we've had 15 applicants. We've only had 15 tickets bought. And we've realized it's Wednesday, it's up for Motzei Shabbos, we're going to have to cancel this event." We've lost £3,500 over this. We booked the hall, we booked the entertainers. It's cost us a lot of money. And you failed. And he told me that night, he said he was really felt completely empty. He said, what's he supposed to feel like now? He's complete failure. What have I done? I've ruined it. I've lost their money. I've lost everything. So I said to him, you've looked at this the wrong way. What do you mean? Of course you failed. Yes, you failed. But you've got to realize that because you failed, that's why you're going to grow. Your growth is going to come from your failures. Because once you failed, once, twice, you realize that every success that you have was never your own success. You begin to realize that your job in life is a battle ritzemcha. Don't be so self-centered on your own successes. Don't be so confident in yourself. You've got to realize that everything you've got to do is got to be because that's what you think, that's what the Rebbeinu Shem wants. If you're doing it because the Rebbeinu Shem wants, that's what's going to be, what's going to make you powerful. The Gemara says, Ein emanim parnas al tzibah elim kein toilim voi kupushot shrotzim. You can't have a parnas on the tzibah unless he's got some sort of history. The history has taught him not to be self-centered. The history has taught him to be an onov. And that onov that he's been taught is what's going to give him the power to be successful in everything he does. So it's a failure, it's a difficulty that teach us to become strong. They teach us that it's the Rebbeinu Shem running the world, and from there we become much, much bigger. And that's a paradox of failure. Klal Yisrael went through Golus. The message of Golus was a Korah Bazel. It was a difficult time. It was like going through a furnace. It burnt Klal Yisrael. It taught Klal Yisrael, you can't be focused on yourselves, you can't be focused on your guf, because your guf is going to be afflicted in a terrible way. The message of Golus came through. Kashe ya'anu oisoi. Kein yirbe v'chein yifroi. The Rebbeinu Shem was telling Klal Yisrael, I want you to realize that the more you get afflicted, the more difficulties you go through, the more you're going to grow. That's not going to make you small. That's not going to annul you. It'll make you stronger. It'll make you bigger. If you're ya'anu oisoi, if you go through the afflictions, that's going to be yirbe v'chein yifroi. That's going to make you strong. That's going to make you big. So that was the message of Kashi Anuaisai, and that's the message of Golus altogether. The message of Golus is that we have to realize that our guf can be afflicted, but our neshama can become stronger where our guf gets afflicted. So just to end off, Moshe Rabbeinu was the honor of Mikol Odom. The one who took them out of Mitzrayim had to be the honor of Mikol Odom, the person who had no self-interest. His pure self-interest was Rebbeinu Shem. And that's why the Pasuk says, Vayigdal HaYeled, Moshe grew up in the house of Pare. But then the pasuk goes on, the very next pasuk, and it says again, Vayigdal Moshe, Vayetzel Echov, Vayabes Evloisom. What made Moshe Rabbeinu a godoy? What made Moshe Rabbeinu big? What made Moshe Rabbeinu strong? Was his anova, his ability to go out, Vayetzel Echov, Vayabes Evloisom, to see what they're going through, to care about another person. The less self-interest there was, the less self-building there was, the stronger he became, the more Vayigdal he became. So that's our... that's the message of Golus. That's what we've got to take out of Golus, is to realize our guf is not the ikka. Our ikka is the neshama, is the message of battle, ritzincha, and neir ritzoni. And with that, we should be zeichet to the Golus Shleimah.